Okay, welcome to Finance Friday. This is Jerry Fetta. I'm the owner, founder, and CEO of Wealth Dynamics. If you've not tuned in before, I want to welcome you. If you've joined before, I want to welcome you back. So this week, we're going to be talking about part two on legacy protection, legacy building, asset protection, this idea of using entities, structuring them with the correct sequences and the correct organizing pattern to give yourself long-term legacy. Right, and to protect what you've built. Okay, so guys, I want to share this with you because this Finance Friday thing. I want to talk about that first. But I've been doing this every week for 4 or 5 years now. We took a little break, right? We've been going at this for quite some time. But the reason I do these Finance Friday webinars is to share financial education, right? So my vision is a world where the majority of wealth is controlled by good people who use it to make the world a better place. Right. And so that can't happen if the information is kept, right? It's staying secret. It's something we don't know about. And I want to share something with you as a viewpoint. There really are no secrets in life. Right. The idea that there are secrets, right? Things that are, they're held back. We're not going to know them. They're only known by a few people. Really, a secret is a victim's way of describing lack of awareness. Okay, I'm going to repeat that. A secret is a victim's way of describing their lack of awareness. Right? So I don't want you to have the idea as we talk about this evening that there are secrets, that there are things that you can't know and that are held back. And right, there's certain things that just are and aren't talked about, right? So there's intimate aspects of everyone's life that they don't discuss. And money is one of those aspects. And it doesn't change at the top 1% level. Right. And so part of my backstory is if you don't know, I grew up in the lower class, lower income, right? Free lunch, subsidy school programs. When I was 8 years old, we lost the house. My mom and dad got divorced. Car got taken away. We were homeless on both mom's side and dad's side, all in the same summer. Right. And I felt like money was a secret. I felt like it was a secret. I felt like there was rules that I didn't know about, and there were things that you just would never know about money. And it wasn't just a secret, it was also a mystery. It was like, not only is it a secret, but it's complex and it's hard to understand. And as I started to learn about finances and I started taking more responsibility for that area of my life, I started to realize that all of this stuff comes down to two things, right? Basic math, arithmetic, right? Add, subtract, multiply, divide, and vocabulary. And so, what I quickly learned is if you have the ability to use a dictionary and a calculator, you can understand most things finance. Right? But this then comes back to one more thing. I believe that somebody would only learn about finance if they're willing to take responsibility for it. Right? Sometimes it's easier to not know. Sometimes it's easier to say, I didn't understand that. I didn't know because I have something to blame it on. But once I know, all of a sudden, I've got nothing to blame it on. I know, and I either did or I didn't use the information. Okay, so as you're watching this webinar, whether you're watching live with us this evening, or not, you're watching the replay, I want you to think about, okay, what am I willing to take responsibility for my finances right now? What are my goals in the next 5 years? Where would I like to be at? Right? And chances are, if you're watching this is not the first time you've watched a training on finances. You've probably been to trainings, you've probably read books, you've probably been to conferences, you've done various things, and there's a reason why you're here, right? You wouldn't come back. I want you to think about if a person that's suffering from cancer goes to the doctor and gets treatment and their cancer gets healed, they're probably not going to go back to the cancer doctor again to get treatment. They got handled. It's done. The problem has been solved. Right? It's not something they feel they need to revisit. So if you're watching this right now, I would bet that you've not handled the problem you're trying to handle with your finances. There's a reason why you're here. And I want you to think about what that reason is and have that at the forefront of your mind as you watch this, because we're going to talk about some very great asset protection stuff, some advanced legacy planning stuff, but there's a lot more than just that, right? And this is one of the fundamentals, right? So guys, I want to talk to you about my story as it relates to my firsthand experience with legacy and asset protection. Okay, so I was my mom's financial advisor, right? When I was 18 years old, I got my licenses. I started doing insurance investments for one of the largest brokerage companies in the country. And my mom was my first client, and I was doing all the traditional stuff, right? We set her up with the retirement account, the age 59 and a half, you build up the nest egg, you withdraw it, and we did all of this stuff. And when she turned 59 and a half, age 60, she was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. Okay, if you don't know my story, she lived 6 months and she didn't get to enjoy any of the things that she worked for. She didn't get to enjoy any of the investments that we did. She didn't get to do any of the stuff you're supposed to be able to do when you turn 59 and a half and you can finally access these assets. Right? Now, the other part of this story is that she did not have an asset a protection plan or a legacy plan. She didn't have a trust. Everything she owned went through the court system. It went through probate. My sister, she took time off of work for months and months to sort through this, right? It became a big problem. Okay, it became a financial burden for the rest of our family, right? The assets that she had, some of them she had to get rid of, and it was not this neat planned out. And what happened is from one generation, like just the one generation, not even from one generation, in one generation, all of the wealth she had built was wiped out, like that. Gone, done, right? Start from zero. Okay. And for me, when I was experiencing this, the emotional turmoil, the family problems that come up, the financial issues that come up during a time like that when you're going through settling someone's estate in the court system, right? The average probate case, when I say probate, it means when you pass away, even if you have a will, everything you own is going to go through the court system. Everything. It all becomes public information. All of your assets become everyone else's business. The court then takes about 18 months on average to distribute the assets to those that you intended for them to go to. Right. So we're talking, quite a long wait before anyone sees anything as far as your legacy is concerned. The fees for going through probate are on average about 15%. Whereas you think about that, everything just became public. Right, 15% off the top in fees, 18-month wait, right? That's not beneficial to anybody. Now, as I was going through that, I didn't realize that's not how it's supposed to be. Right? I thought that was normal. Like from one generation to the next, for me to grow up poor, it made sense that that's how people grow up is poor. Right? If you grew up in a financial household where you didn't have a financial advantage, that means that your parents and grandparents didn't do something correctly financially. And not to blame them, but that's the reality is they were ignorant with money. And their ignorance led to lack of planning, lack of investing, lack of using the resources that we have. That's what money is it's a resource, it's a tool, right? So using the tool only to perpetuate the present time condition or to try and handle the past, but never building a future. Right, I strongly disagree with this because isn't that what a family is? Building a future? So how can someone in their right mind say, I'm going to build a family, and at the same time, I'm not going to build a financial future? The number one thing those people will need that you call your family is finances. Okay, so here's what typically happens is a person is born. Right. And there's certain laws that they're born into. Gravity is one of them. Oxygen is one of them. Needing to eat is one of them. Right. Needing to sleep is one of them. Economics is also one of them. So if I'm not treating economics like a natural law, which it is, it's no different than not treating gravity like a natural law, not treating eating like a natural law. How irresponsible would you say a parent is for their child to not teach them they need to eat? Okay, so then how irresponsible would it be to not teach them how to use the thing that they would pay for the food they're going to eat with? You can't have one, not the other, right? So what happens is parents, they get busy and families, they get busy. They don't plan ahead. Mom and dad barely make it with retirement if they do anything at all, right? And then they've got their car payments and their mortgages and all the normal things because they just spent everything hand to mouth, covering the bills and being paycheck to paycheck. And they don't build a legacy. And what ends up occurring is they become old and they become, in a state of life where they need assistance. They become a liability to their children. The kids have to take care of them. It costs money for that. It costs time. People have to take time off of work, right? There's emotional turmoil, all because we didn't plan ahead, right? And everyone dies. Like it's a part of life. It's a normal thing. Like it's not like it's a secret. And we're like, I didn't know that was going to happen. Right? Every person in the history of the world has had that happen. So why not plan ahead for it? Okay, now on the flip side, let's say you do all the wealth building stuff. You are investing, you are saving, you are, growing your net worth, you are doing all this stuff, but you don't do the piece we're talking about today. You don't protect your assets. You don't set up the legacy plan. Right? All of the work that you've put in still becomes a liability to those that are receiving it. By definition, if it costs them time, it costs them money, it costs them stress, it costs them maybe their own morals because you didn't train them on what to do with the money you're giving them. Right? It costs them liability. It's a risk. It's a liability. It's not a legacy. So you have to have both of these. You need to build wealth, but you need to also have a legacy plan and an asset protection plan. I want to talk to you today about how to go about that. Now, before I do, it's important to note, okay, I am not an attorney. So I'm not going to give you legal advice. I don't want you watching this video and saying, Jerry said blah, and I'm going to now go do all of this by myself off of one video. No. You need to work with an actual law firm when you do the things we're talking about tonight. So I'm going to share with you what I'm doing. I'm going to share with you what some of my clients are doing. But you need to then take this and say, good, I'm going to learn more. I'm going to dive deeper. I'm going to really figure this out and I'm going to customize it to what I need and work with a group and a team that can help with that. And my company can do that with you if you're interested, right? So here's what we talked about last week. Okay, we talked about the idea that you have your family trust, right? You have your family trust. This is the organization. This is your goals, your purposes, your standard operating procedures or policies, right? That's one big element of what's in this family trust. Okay. Beneath this family trust, you also have your banking system, right? So your family trust has its own economy. This is the banking system. This is the sacred account that we talk about, right? So you have this. You're owned by the family trust. You can have it set up to where your trust owns the life insurance. The trust is also the beneficiary of the life insurance, right? But this is something that's perpetual, right? That banking system allows you to be the bank, right? To do the exact thing the wealthy have done. Okay, but the family trust describes the goals. What are the goals of our family, financially speaking? What's the impact we're trying to make on the world around us? What are the rules that we operate by? Right, so what are the standard operating procedures? How do we invest? When do we take money out? Who takes money out? Why do they get to? When do we have life insurance put in place? Right? How do we handle taxes? How do we handle philanthropy? That's all in the family trust. Okay. Now, there's an element of protection from probate specifically. Right? So what happens is because I have a trust and my trust owns all of my assets, when I die, I don't physically own anything. Because I don't physically own anything, right? What happens is instead my trust owns it all, right? Because my trust owns it all, I don't have to worry about probate because it doesn't go through the court system. Now, my trust didn't die, you see what I'm saying? So my trust would own my house, my car, my life insurance, my businesses, my investments, my everything, so that when I pass away, Jerry Fetta's name was on nothing. There's no probate case. It's open, shut, done. Right? The trust instead stays alive and it starts to manage and distribute and grow the assets the way that I intended. Okay? So that's how a trust works. Now, underneath all of this, here's the structure that you want to be looking at. Because a trust only really protects against the probate aspect. If you're super high risk, you may want to have what's called a domestic asset protection trust. Right? This gives you a second trust for the purpose of protection from creditors, lawsuits, those types of things. Right? So your trust is like the main family organization. Right? Your wife, your kids, your husband, your grandkids, your all of the people who are involved in your family as well. They're up here at the trust level. Okay? But you want to put separation between everything that's going to happen down here, which we're going to describe, and everything that's happening up here at the family level. So this is like putting like a moat with like crocodiles and alligators and stuff, and nobody's gonna be able to cross this. It's like a castle with the moat around it. Okay. That Domestic Asset Protection Trust creates that. So if someone pierces any of the stuff we're gonna have going on down here, you have this last layer of protection. Okay, now let's talk about the stuff that's gonna go on down here for a second. We've got the domestic trust. Not everyone needs that, by the way. If you're like, I own a house and I have a retirement account, you probably don't need a domestic asset protection trust. If you're owning a business that your brand and your name is clearly associated with, or you own investments that like rentals or something that's high risk that your name is clearly associated with, you want to have a domestic asset protection trust potentially for that. You'd want to consult with your attorney on the specifics of this, right? But let's say whether you do or don't, let's just talk about what's happening down here, right? So you have your, we're just going to call this a DAPT, DAPT. You have your DAPT here, right? And then you're going to have your assets here, right? Typically, the DAPT is going to have in between here, you're going to have an anonymous holding company. It's an LLC, that's your holding company. And then that holding company is going to have other anonymous LLCs. Right? This is how mine is set up. This is how many of my clients have ours set up. Right? We work with the Asset Protection Institute on this. Right? You can have as many of these LLCs as you want to. Right? But let's say that this one is a rental property. Let's say this one is a business, right? This one, let's say, is private lending. Right? These are things you would have set up and owned by the LLC. Now, the cool thing with this is when you're setting up an anonymous LLC, it's an LLC that does not publicly disclose the ownership, right? So various states that you set the LLCs up in, I'm not going to get into specifics because you need to work with your attorney on this. Right, but various states you set them up in will not publish the name of the owner. Right, so if someone looks up, an LLC in Florida, for example, right, sunbiz.com, you can instantly see the LLC, the owner, their address. You can even then use that to maybe go to the Better Business Bureau or LinkedIn and find their contact info. And before you know it, you're at their front doorstep. Right, so if you're trying to protect yourself and you say, well, I don't want that, you would set up an anonymous LLC. Okay, that anonymous LLC does not disclose the ownership of the LLC. In order for someone to find out the owner, they need to get a judge's order, meaning they need to go to court and win and get an order from a judge saying, okay, great, we're giving a literal legal order for that LLC to disclose the ownership. Who owns that LLC? Okay. So here's the beautiful thing about that. If you do this correctly, that anonymous LLC is owned by what? Another anonymous LLC, which means that this person needs to now go to court once again and win once again and get a judge's order once again to find out who owns this LLC. Okay? You tracking here? Most people don't have the time and money for this. You could add more of them in the middle if you wanted to, if you really wanted to. Now, here's the great part about this is let's say that they do that. Right, they go and they win on this one, boom, out of the way. They go and they win on this one, boom, out of the way. Now we have a domestic asset protection trust that they can't win. It literally has a period that anything that happens outside of this period of time isn't valid. Lawsuit, creditor, doesn't matter. Right? It's outside the statute of limitations. Can't get access to it no matter what. Okay, so this is again a domestic asset protection trust. Now, a trust is interesting. A trust is not a federally recognized entity. It's a private document, it's a private entity, right? You don't go and set up a trust and register on a state website or anything like that. Literally, you just say, I now have a trust. Here's the trust documents. Here's the agreement. Maybe I get a tax ID number. Maybe I don't. Depends on what I'm setting up and who I'm working with. But this domestic asset protection trust gives me ultimate protection. Okay, now who runs this one? That's the family trust. Okay, if you wanted to, you could insert more corporations in there. But the key to this is the corporations and LLCs. If you study what is an LLC, right? It's a limited liability corporation. So it literally is creating an entity and separating it from you and limiting your liability as the owner of that entity. Right? It's called a corporate veil of protection. You have separation between you and the entity. What happens in the entity doesn't happen with you. Your assets are not the entity's assets. Okay. So the other part of this that you'll see sometimes is obviously these entities all have income. Right. And so we then have the question of, okay, well, you know, if I have an LLC and I do get somebody going after it and I have a lawsuit or a creditor or whatever it may be, right? Let's say they do. What about the money that's here? Okay. And so up here, you could have a management corporation. And that management corporation essentially is the financial funnel, right? All of the money flows from the LLCs up here. And all this corporation does is management. They're not involved in the day-to-day operations. They just collect the money and send the money up to, you could send it up to your family trust. You could send it to another company, right? But that essentially strips the income out of the LLC so that if something did happen, you're not taking big losses here on income, reserves, and assets, right? That management corporation here, guys, this is typically where I would put my banking system, right? I'm gonna have a management corporation, probably owns the life insurance policies, my sacred accounts, right? And the reason why this exists is these sacred accounts would loan money to start the LLCs up and then take loan income back, pay that into the management corporation, or vice versa. I could have it up here as well, right? The nice thing with the sacred accounts is those sacred accounts are also creditor proof. Right, they're also guaranteed against loss. They're lawsuit proof. They have all of the similar protections we're discussing on the LLCs. Right. So why am I going over this? Because as you build wealth in the world that we live in today, you can and will become a target. Right, and you know, you go through different levels of overcoming adversity as you're doing this wealth thing, and the first level is your willingness to build wealth. Right, the willingness to actually pursue it. Right. The second level is your knowledge. Right. Third level is as you start learning and you start doing these things, you realize, man, this isn't passive at all. I don't have the team, the resources, the bandwidth. That's why a lot of people get stumped and they're like, I'm just going to give it to a financial advisor. Right. When you finally get there, right, you're gonna have risk. You're gonna have people that might target you. You're gonna have legal liability. You're gonna have creditors. You're gonna have all of these different potentials. Right. Plus, you're going to have taxes, you're going to have, you know, probate. And these are the things that will for sure come up in the future. And so my purpose in sharing this with you tonight is to give you the concepts. Right. I believe everybody should have a trust. Everybody should have a trust that's secondary to your banking system. You should have your banking system. You should have your trust. OK, everybody should have that piece of their estate plan. Everyone should have at least one LLC with that trust. Right. And how far below you go in that structuring the entities and the organization of it all, that's between you and your attorney. Right. But if you don't have your trust and your LLC and you don't have your sacred account, those are the starting points. Right. And you can get into, you know, tax-free corporations in Dubai and Cook Island trusts and all sorts of really cool stuff. But it starts here. Right. So if you're watching this right now and you don't have your sacred account, you do not have your banking system. Right. The root of the word economy means to manage a personal household. So you are an economy. You and your family are an economy, and an economy has a banking system. So if you are using someone else's banking system, you need to have your own instead. Okay. If you don't have a legacy plan where you've got your trust set up and you don't have an asset protection plan where you have your LLC set up, you need to do that. Those are just points of responsibility. I'm either going to operate like an economy and I'm going to gain knowledge on it and take responsibility for it, or I'm not. If I am, these are the first two steps from an action standpoint. Okay. Now, let me talk to you really quickly before we sign out on the banking thing, right? Because you might be watching this like, why would I set up my own banking system? Okay. So you probably use a bank right now, right? And the big question that all of us can ask ourselves, and it's a legitimate question, is why is my net worth not higher? How come I'm not building more wealth faster, right? And the whole banking system and the sacred account thing, it works like this. If I was hungry, I would put food in my body, not someone else's body. You're tracking with my logic on that, right? Like, I'm the one that's hungry. If I have food, it would make sense that I feed myself first because I'm the one that has hunger. If I'm feeding someone else's body instead of mine, I wouldn't wonder why I'm still hungry. I'd be like, oh, because I gave my food to them instead. Okay, so hold that thought. Now I want you to switch it to money. If I'm not building a wealth at the rate that I want to, if my net worth is not where I want it to be, and I'm receiving money, I have income and I have savings, but I'm putting those resources into someone else's bank instead of my own, is the equivalent of me being hungry and feeding someone else's body instead of my own body. You would never do that. It doesn't make sense. And if I pointed out that you were doing it, you're like, oh, you're right. That's ridiculous. But as soon as it's, oh, you need to start your own banking system. Oh, I don't know about that. Right? If you're not building wealth, it's because you're taking the resources you get and giving it to someone else for them to build wealth with instead of you. You're taking the food that you get and feeding it to someone else instead of eating it for your own hunger. And that's why it's not working. Okay, so guys, that's all I have for you tonight. I do want to give you a copy of my free book. So if you're watching this right now, I want to give you a copy of my book here. Let me just grab the link from my team because we recently changed all this stuff up. So guys, the book here is Blueprint to Financial Freedom, right? And I wrote this several years back. And the reason I wrote this is the amount of confusion that I went through to figure out what do the 1% actually do. Right? What are their strategies? What are their tactics? What are the things that they actually did historically to build wealth? The amount of time and confusion that took me to uncover it, right? To trace it down and to write it up and say, good, this is what they do. Okay? It was 10 years, I think. It's not workable for the average person. Right? It's not something that the average person can do. And so when you think about, okay, what would be a barrier to someone building wealth? And what would be a barrier to my vision of, a world where the majority of wealth is owned and controlled by good people who use it to make the world a better place? A barrier to that would be it's too much work. It's too confusing. It feels like a secret, right? The awareness level of the average person isn't there. And then the information is not accessible. So I wrote this book, Blueprint to Financial Freedom. I'm going to put the link here on the screen. So if you go to the blueprint to financial freedom.com, okay, the blueprint to financial freedom.com. I know that's a big URL, so I'm going to make sure it's highlighted so you see it. The blueprint to financial freedom.com. If you go there, you can get a free copy of the book, right? And as you read this, it's either going to resound with you or it's not. It's resounded for many, many people across the country, even the world at this point. And if you'd like help with this, that's the place to start. Okay, grab a free copy. You cover your shipping, right? I'll send the book out to you. My team will send the book out to you, right? And we'll even check in with you and see if you'd like any one-on-one help as you're reading it. But start there. Read the book, get the information in your hands, gain the awareness level so that you can start to pursue this stuff. That's all I've got for you this evening. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you next week on Finance Friday.